Our first presentation, Best Practices in Fuel Supply Chain Cleanliness Management, is going to be presented by Dr. Christian Bauer, who's a PhD in mining with Powell Corporation. Most engine manufacturers have issued specific fuel cleanliness requirements, particularly for engines with common rail fuel injection systems. Therefore, contamination control throughout the entire fuel supply chain is critical. In this presentation, Christian will discuss case studies highlighting best practices in fuel supply chain cleanliness management. Please welcome Christian Bauer.
All right, thank you, Steve. All right, yesterday we heard about the circadian rhythms and everything, so we now know that this is a time where we all are kind of drowsy. So let's see that we can get through this phase together. All right, so what I want to talk to you guys about and discuss with you is how to get a good contamination control practice going in the fuel supply chain. Now, fuel is really the lifeblood of most surface mining operations, because without fuel, none of the machinery will ever move. So what I want to do is I want to give a quick description of this application, talk about what is the contamination challenge that we're facing here, what are the critical components in the supply chain, in this whole system of fuel and fuel usage, then talk about strategies, how to manage cleanliness, talk a little bit about advanced filtration technology, because as a filtration guy, I can't not talk about it, and then give you a couple of case studies to highlight how this can be done. All right, so this is a typical diesel fuel supply chain for a surface mine, okay? So usually we start by having fuel delivered. Now here we have a tanker truck, but it could be a barge, it could be by pipeline. But however, the diesel fuel is transported to the mine, it gets offloaded through very large pumps, 300, 400 GPM, and then gets stored in a main storage tank. At this point, usually you would have some sort of filtration installed, maybe even a coalescer or a water separator to take out water. And then from main storage tanks, sometimes you have a transfer of that fuel to localized smaller storage tanks, secondary storage tanks, and then you get to the point of fuel refuelability, the fuel islands, the filling stations where all the mobile equipment gets refueled. Now, along all these points, you might have filtration. In blue, you see what we call the bulk fuel filters, which are really large filters that can handle high flow rates and large contaminant loads. And then further down, the brown ones are the point of use filter installations at the filling point. And then onboard the engines, usually there's also engine fuel filters. These are the ones that are highlighted in yellow, okay? So that's the typical application that we're talking about here. So fuel gets passed along until it reaches the trucks and shovels in the pit. Now, what's the primary contamination challenge? Well, we do know from experience that fuel cleanliness levels can vary significantly. ISO cleanliness codes of 22-2017 are not uncommon. Now, what does that mean? That is actually roughly equivalent to a gravimetric level of 20 milligrams of dirt per liter of fuel. And just to give you an idea of what that means, let's say you have a mine site that uses 134,000 liters a day. What is that? Roughly a fourth of that in gallons. So still a good amount. So let's say you come in with 22-2017 ISO code. That means over the course of a year, you're actually pumping 800 kilograms or almost 1,600 pounds of dirt through your fuel supply chain. Now, that cannot and must not end up in the trucks and in the shovels on the engine, because the onboard filters will plug up a lot more often than you would like. So you need to make sure that if you have fuel coming in this dirty, you need to have filtration along the way to take it out. But that's just one part of how to manage the cleanliness, okay? Also, another important number, 18, 16, 13, which is this here, that is the fuel cleanliness level that is suggested by the worldwide fuel charter as an incoming fuel cleanliness for typical EOI fuel injector engines. Now, 18, 16, 13 would still give you about 50 kilograms of dirt per year if you're running 134,000 liters a day, okay, which is manageable, but it's still a relatively large number. And also, sometimes, in some locations, maybe not here in Arizona, you might have water in the fuel that's being delivered, and typical diesel fuel saturates around 100 ppm, okay? Anything above that would be present as free water, droplets or emulsified water that is in the fuel. It will settle out in tanks, but you would have to handle that and remove that too. Let's say you actually have 0.5% of water, which is 5,000 ppm. That means you would have to remove 250,000 liters of water every year to get your fuel free of water, dry. Okay? So that's the contamination challenge that we're facing here. All right. Now, this one is a very busy slide, but it kind of highlights where the requirements are and where we typically are when fuel is delivered. Okay? So up here, this is an image of a sample of fuel that is drawn down onto an analysis membrane patch, and then you look at it under a microscope, and you then can see what the contamination looks like. Okay, so this is 2017, typical fuel as delivered. Okay, then here, 1613, this is actually what the worldwide fuel charter tells you should have, and a sample would look like this, a lot cleaner. And what you need to know is with this ISO cleanliness code, every increase in the code number by level of one is actually doubling of the number of particles and hence the doubling of the amount of contamination that you have in your fuel. So this is already significantly cleaner than what you typically get. But, and here's the important part, if you are working with engines that have a modern injection systems like high pressure common rail, the fuel injection equipment manufacturers actually require you to be much cleaner than this. They require you to be in this neighborhood down here, which means virtually no contamination in your fuel. And in order to get to that point on the engines, you really need to make sure that all along your supply chain, from entry into storage, bulk transfer, point of use, you need to make sure that you're taking out contamination every step of the way. Otherwise, you will never get to that point. Okay. Now, what is the critical component in this whole fuel supply chain filter? It's not the storage tanks. It really is the fuel injectors on board the engines, because the fuel injector is really what makes the engines run. It determines how much fuel gets injected and how well the combustion process in the cylinders works. So these injectors are the most critical component, and modern high-pressure common rail injectors require very high fuel cleanliness levels, much higher than the older electrode-unit injectors. And that means they actually need to be 30 times cleaner in the delivered fuel through those injectors than previously. So that's really a big step in requirements. Okay, the reasons being is high-pressure carbon rail injectors have injection pressure that is as high as 40,000 psi. The clearances in the injectors are relatively small, and they're very small because these injectors work like solenoid valves. They open and close up to 70 times per second. And the reason for them to do this is that you have multiple injection events per rotation of your engine. So you can really meter very exactly how much fuel gets injected at each point in your combustion process. And the reason why you want to do that is because by doing that, you control the emissions, and you control really how well your fuel burns. And the only way to do that is to have an injector that really just opens like a valve very quickly, and that requires very clean fuel, because otherwise that will just get stuck or wear, okay? So what is the impact of inadequate fuel cleanliness? First and foremost, of course, your onboard fuel filter could plug prematurely if you did not take out the contamination up front. And when that happens, you will not meet your scheduled maintenance changeout intervals. You know, eventually you might have to go down to the pit and change it on the fly, which is lost production. Let's say the filter doesn't plug up and the contamination goes to the injectors. Over time, you might get loss of engine power because you have wear in the injector. The injector may fail or may not meet OEM life expectations, so we'd have to exchange it out earlier, and that's cost right there. Because now the metering is not as exact anymore, you can have increase of emissions, soot formation, incomplete combustion, and all that may result in not complying with EPA regulations for emissions and whatever. So all in all, this highlights how important it is that these injectors run with very clean fuel. Okay, now here's an OEM requirement. It's actually taken out of the Bosch specification, and it's the Bosch specification for severe duty, which is off-highway vehicles and mining vehicles are a part of that. So this specification says that you cannot exceed a contamination level of ISO cleanliness code of 16.13.8, which is four times cleaner than what the Worldwide Fuel Charter told you. So you cannot run a high-pressure carbon rail with that type of contamination. They do allow you to, if you maintain 12.97 ISO code, they allow you to maintain that for 35% of the service hours, and you'll be okay, you're still meeting their spec. But what they really would like to see is that you run with 11.87 cleanliness codes. And if you are able to maintain that with your onboard filters, you can run 100% of your service hours that way. Okay? But in order to get there, you need to have advanced supplementary filtration in the fuel supply chain so that an onboard filter can actually get to those cleanliness levels, because otherwise it will not be able to do that. Okay? So how we go about doing cleanliness management, there's a couple of components that are really important and they will always be part of it. The first thing is you need to find out where are you in your current state of affairs. So you would do what we call a fuel supply chain audit. You're really just assessing and documenting your status quo. You want to find out what levels of filtration do I have installed where, how clean am I at bulk offload, how clean am I at my fuel islands. And if you can, maybe during a maintenance, find out how clean am I on board, upstream or downstream of the fuel filters on board, okay? Then you want to determine your required target fuel cleanliness levels. And that's based on the critical point in your process. Let's say you have electronic unit injectors. Okay, then your requirement is 18, 16, 13. If you have high-pressure common rail, well, then your requirement is a lot cleaner, like I showed earlier. Okay? Once you know that, the next step is to look at your filtration. Make sure it is what you need. If it is not what you need, then you need to select and size the required filtration. And any filtration company can help you with that. And once you've done that, well, let's say you've installed filters, you've decided, okay, this is the way I want to go. You don't stop there. You're still going to continuously monitor and acquire data. You want to find out, what is my fuel cleanliness? in particular contamination. Do I have water? Don't I have water? You also want to track your productivity. How many changeouts do I have now? Can I extend my service intervals? Do I reduce my maintenance costs? And do I get better production with that? So it's really all about tracking your progress. Okay? Excuse me. So fuel supply chain evaluation. This is, the process starts with an audit to understand your current conditions. You want to understand how your overall system works and how fuel is stored and moved around the site. What cleanliness levels do you achieve? And you do it by taking samples and measuring. What filtration is there? And then just find out, assess where would you want to put filtration if you need it. And then go forward from there. Okay? So in the end, you will end up with something like this. Okay? In red, you have your typical contamination levels that you see. Okay? Let's say here in offload you have 21, 19, 15. At point of use, the at the brown filters there, 19, 16, 14. And then in green, you'll have your required contamination levels. And you really want to work backwards. Okay? Let's say you have a mobile fleet that has high pressure common rail. So 11, 8, 7 is your requirement. So you work backwards from there, and then you say, okay, if I need to have 1187 on board, how clean do I have to be downstream of my point of zero filters? And then usually you say there's a difference of about 4 isocodes per filter location, so that's where you want to be. So then you say 15, 14, 11 for the point of use. And then you track it further back to the bulk, transfer bulk offload, and that's how you get to your requirements. Okay, so you end up with a map like that. Okay, now I'm not going to really go into the table that's here, but this is how you select the suitable filtration system for this type of application. Now, a fuel supply chain, you only have one chance to take out contamination because it's a single pass. It does not recirculate like in hydraulic systems. So you only have one chance to remove contamination. So what you need to do is, you've got to consider the flow rate, but you also need to consider how much fuel do I have to process annually, because that determines the amount of contamination, the mass of contamination that needs to be removed. And the filters have to be sized correctly so your changeout intervals are not ridiculously short. And tables like shown here will help you find out what you need. Okay? Let's talk about conventional filtration technology. Conventional filtration technology is what you would typically see in normal bulk filtration installations. It's filter elements that usually use cellulose filtration media. We call it paper or sometimes toilet paper, even though it's not. Typical filtration ratios are relatively low. Filtration ratio is a measure for the efficiency. Okay, so a filter may be 98% efficient, which means out of 1,000 particles, 20 will go through. But that's actually not a high efficient filter element, or even one that's 98.7% efficient is not a high efficiency filter element, because that's still not enough to protect the downstream systems. So what you really need is something else. Okay? Something is not working here. Okay. What you need is advanced filtration technology, and that's really filtration that has a much higher efficiency. 99.9% efficient, which means out of 1,000 particles, only one goes through. And if only one goes through, that's really making a big step forward, because you will then get the chance to really break that chain reaction of wear on the engines then. Right, so these filters also are characterized by long service life because you have a maximized filtration mean service area. There's a certain way of pleating those filter elements so that you can maximize the area in the element. And you want to use filter elements that have synthetic or glass fiber filtration media because they have a much higher service life. Okay. Now, the other component is to measure, okay? And contamination measurement is you got to be able to know what it is that you're dealing with. And this just shows you what kind of size range we're talking about. Now, human hair, we can see with our naked eye, has about 75 micron in diameter. But a typical clearance size particle is about 5 microns, so that is much smaller than that. We cannot see that with our unaided eye. So the only way to see that is with a microscope or with particle counters that can actually detect and measure that in the fuel itself. Okay. All right, now here is a comparison of different fluid sampling methods. There's two ways of doing it. One is you take bottle samples, and then you take the bottle sample, take it onto an analysis patch, and look at it under a microscope. Or you have an online particle counter or cleanliness monitor where you take a sample online without even exposing it to the environment, and you get your cleanliness level that way. Now, what this chart shows is that for relatively dirty samples, let's say isocodes upwards of 18, 16, 13, there's really no difference in the results that you get between online and offline counting. But once you get to levels where you have very clean fuel and where requirements ask for very clean fuel, bottle sampling is not going to give you any good idea of how clean you really are, because a reasonable level of cleanliness that you can detect with bottle samples is about 15, 14, 11, okay, which is already relatively clean. But if you want to measure anything cleaner than that with bottle samples, you can't, because there's so much contamination coming in. Every time you handle a bottle sample, you know, we all know our mindset's relatively dirty. So you don't want to expose your sample to environmental contamination. And this plot shows that for very clean samples, your deviation is just very large. Okay? So what you really want to do is, if you can hook up a cleanliness monitor or a particle counter into your line, you know, with a sample port where you can just draw it into your particle counter. If you can't do that and you've got to use bottle samples, you just got to make sure that you really flush your sample bottle very well and don't expose it to the environment for a very long time, because I've tried it many times on a mine site. You cannot measure clean with a bottle sample. Okay, so I would always suggest to use something like this, which is a cleanliness monitor. It's a mesh blockage device where the instrument has two channels. Each channel has a mesh in it. And as you flow your fluid sample through that monitor, the mesh will actually capture contamination. And the mesh has two different sizes. One is a 5 micron, one is a 15 micron mesh. So the delta P buildup across the mesh can then be calibrated and correlated to an isocode. And that's how you measure that. Okay? All right, let's talk about some examples and how it's done in real life. Okay. Now, example one is a coal mine, and here we're talking about point-of-use filtration, point-of-use stations. Okay, here this particular mine site had 10 5-micron nominally-rated pleated paper filter elements installed at the fuel islands. Flow rate was about 100 GPM, and it was filled into 200,000-gallon storage tanks. Operating temperature usually around 80 degrees Fahrenheit ambient. And they changed these filters out at 15 psi differential pressure. It was actually DP measurement on those. Okay, so they were not getting the cleanliness levels they needed. I think they were upwards of 19, 16, 14 in that range. So we came in and said, okay, let's do the audit. Let's see what you need. And eventually, they decided to upgrade to the high performance filter elements. Now, rated at 7 microns. Now, why would you say 7 microns when they were 5 micron? But these 7 micron filters are actually equivalent or actually better than the nominal rated 5 micron filters. Okay? So, let's just do this. Also, the change out differential pressure was higher for these high efficiency filters. They had more filtration area, but they cost 6 times more. So here, it was really a question of what's the return on investment in doing this kind of thing. Okay, and here are the results. Okay, it turned out that the actual cost benefit per year to this operator was $7,000, even though they had $23,000 higher costs for the filter elements, but they reduced the operational costs by over $27,000, and that was really due to the higher change of differential pressure, because now these filter elements lasted 3 times longer than the original paper filters, with the lower DP change out and a smaller surface area. And there were also reduced disposal costs, and all in all together, so you have $7,000 savings per year. Of course, that doesn't sound like much, but we didn't even include the man hours, and we did not include the effect of the fact that we're now getting cleanliness levels of 14, 12, 9 downstream of the filter elements, and what that does along the supply chain. So that just highlights that. Okay, I have another example. This time it's an iron ore mine. Again, it's a point of use filling station. Typically, what they got incoming is about 19, 17, 11 as an ISO code. They wanted to get 16, 14, 11 downstream of the filters at the filling nozzles. Okay, so this picture shows that big filling station and also where those filters were installed. All right, this is what we got. Okay, here we installed 5 micron filters because we weren't sure that we would get to the cleanliness level with the 7 microns. And it turned out that we achieved 13.71 downstream cleanliness levels, which exceeded their target. So this customer was very happy with that. Okay, I got another example. This time it's a gold mine. And here, we're looking at the entire diesel fuel supply chain. Offload flow rate, 400 GPM, and incoming cleanliness levels, 22-2013, so really dirty. It's filled into two 200,000-gallon storage tanks. There was no point-of-use filtration there, and they were still getting 2016-11 at their filling nozzles. Now, that's lower than what is offloaded, and it's indicative that in their storage tanks there's some settling of contamination, right? So eventually, of course, those tanks would load up with contamination over the life of the mine, I guess. Now, this customer wanted a target cleanliness level of 15, 13, 10 at the point of use. So here, it was determined that we actually need to put filtration at 3 important points. One is at the offload, then at the bulk transfer where it transferred through the filling stations, and then at point of use at the nozzles. And it was also decided to do this in a staggered way where you start with a 12 micron filter offload, then step up to a 6 micron filter in the transfer, and step up to a 5 micron filter at point of use. So you're getting successively cleaner that way. Okay. And here is the result, okay? So now, with doing this, the point of use cleanliness code is 14, 13, 11, which exceeded their target. And in the first 3 months of operations, they also saw changes in how their mine operated because they reduced injector failures. Before, they had 70 injector failures per quarter. Now they're getting zero. And this was actually something where this particular mine site was able to track these things. They were tracking these things up front. So to show this was really good for them because they thought, you know what, this is really helping us justifying what we just did with the whole audit and installing all these filters. Okay. Also, it improved the service life of the onboard fuel filters that are installed on the trucks. Before, most of the trucks did not meet the changeout interval, so they had to change out before they had to schedule it. So now they're meeting the scheduled service intervals because they're getting cleaner fuel delivered to the trucks. That improved vehicle reliability and increased the production potential from the existing fleet. And so in summary, Modern diesel fuel injection systems are sensitive to particulate contamination and water, and onboard filters need to be installed on the vehicles, and they are. But without bulk or point of use filtration, these onboard filters have a hard time keeping up with the contamination challenge, and it would plug prematurely. And so really what you need is you want to make sure that your onboard filters meet the service interval, so you got to make sure that along the supply chain you always take out contamination as you pass on the fuel. And you want to use high-performance filtration for point of use and for bulk filtration to get a consistently high fuel cleanliness level going into the vehicle's tank. And with that, I'm open to questions.
Christian, when you're out at the mine sites, do you find that oftentimes they're surprised by the quality of their fuel, or do they usually know they have a problem?
Most of the time, operators know they have a problem because they're looking at their maintenance records and they say, you know what, we know something is not right. And some actually have a monitoring program already in place. So then it's really just a matter of starting a conversation and finding out what needs to be done.
Okay. How would you recommend controlling contamination at the fuel fill connections?
At the fuel?
The fuel fill connections. So at the point of use, you're plugging into a large mining truck at a fast fill station, there's going to be contamination on those connection points.
Yeah. Usually, this is really a matter of good housekeeping. I mean, I've seen a lot of things where those fill nozzles are sitting on the ground in the dirt. You want to actually have some sort of receptacle where they sit in and where they're capped and, you know, protected from the environment. You also want to make sure that they're wiped before you actually start filling it. You know, it's good housekeeping practices to help with that. Any questions? Further questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.